Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, we are here with our friend Michelle today, and so excited, as you guys heard in the intro, she's such a gift and been such a gift to our family. But and welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast, Michelle.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
So Elizabeth, tell us how this all kind of emerged, because this is like a cool moment for us. We're selfishly very excited about today and very excited about interviewing you and having this conversation. But I know you kind of set some of this up. This kind of emerged in your mind.
Well, Michelle, you've been Birdie's OT for over a year. And she's had several, but you have been the most life-changing, the most helpful. I just feel like you have an intuition into her and our family dynamic, and you use our whole family in all of her sessions, all the chaos that I bring when I come with all four kids. And so I had the thought, I don't know, months ago, I think when we first started the podcast, man, if I could get Michelle on. But I didn't know, like, what's appropriate, you know, the whole, like, all the HIPAA laws and all, you know, still getting to know you. But then with all the COVID-19 stuff, I just started thinking of all the parents at home who maybe have undiagnosed things with their kids or have typical kids who are struggling right now, and just thought, what a gift and resource you would be to them. So we're so thankful that you said yes. But would you just introduce to us your family and just maybe some of your background of how did you become an occupational therapist? Why did you become an occupational therapist?
Sure. So I have been an OT for 21 years, and all of that time has been in pediatrics. And I am married to Jason, who is a public high school teacher, and we have two kids. We have a daughter who is 13 and in the seventh grade, and a son who's 10 and in the fifth grade. And I, how I got into OT is kind of funny, because I didn't even know about OT when I was in high school and starting to think about what I wanted to do. I knew that I always wanted to work with kids in some capacity in the medical field. And I explored a few different medical arenas before I happened to go to a college that had one of the only OT programs in the state at that time. And it wasn't a mistake that I was there. And so as soon as I discovered OT, I started looking into it, and it just clicked. The whole model of OT and how, as OTs, we look at the whole person just really connected with me. OTs work with the entire lifespan. So there are therapists who work with premature babies in the NICU, and there are therapists who work in the schools, and therapists who work in geriatrics. And one of the parts about OT that's really unique to the field is the that holistic approach. OT has some pretty deep roots in mental health, and so that informs and influences a lot of what we do. looking at what drives an individual. What are they motivated by? What are they interested in? And so in pediatrics, a lot of that is play, which I just love. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's play skills. It's play with a purpose. It's finding whatever is of interest for the child and kind of using that to motivate and to move kiddos along in the skill development that they need.
Yeah. One of the things like, you know, as you're talking, our story is unique and we've shared Birdie's story on the podcast. And so you've been absolutely instrumental in this. And once Birdie got on the scene for us and all this started happening, we started recognizing, because we all have like these plans for our kids and like our kids are going to be this way and they're going to probably perform this way and act this way. And then Psalm 139, I just wrote it down. I'd love to just read this really quick because I think this is like the most beautiful part, one of the most beautiful parts of what you do and what you just said. But in the Passion Translation, I love this. It says, verse 13 of Psalm 139, "You form my inmost being, shaping my delicate inside and my intricate outside, and wove them all together in my mother's womb. I thank you, God, for making me so mysteriously complex," which I think any parent, lot of parents go, yep. And we all probably do that for ourselves. And then it goes on to say, "Everything you do is marvelously breathtaking. It simply amazes me to think about how thoroughly you know me, Lord. You even formed me, every bone in my body. You created me in the secret place." So I just feel like that's the foundation of what I think you've been so helpful in helping. I know us understand is like, man, Birdie as an example is so uniquely and wonderfully made. And what you're doing has so much kingdom impact just to help uncover all of that. But that was just something I wanted to share because I thought it was so prevalent. But we have a lot of other questions to ask you because you're such a fascinating person. And I know Elizabeth has put a lot of these questions, some of the questions together and kind of things we want to ask you because we're just chomping at the bit to get some more information out of you, learning. We want to learn.
I already feel like I'm learning. I didn't realize that OT had so many, that it was, I mean, I guess it totally makes sense now that you're saying it, that it's really holistic. It's the whole person and the whole environment that they live in and the relationships they navigate. But I didn't realize it had like roots in mental health. And that makes total sense, having been exposed to what you do for so long. It's amazing. But before we jump into questions, I feel like I could ask you questions all day long. But I just, in getting to know you the last year or so, and then even seeing how you're navigating everything going on in the world right now, you guys are incredibly intentional parents. Mm. And you've made some really significant sacrifices to juggle two careers while still being very present with your children. And even to the point of you having to work weekend right now so that you can be there when your son gets off the bus. And those have been obvious like choices you guys have been making for a long time. And I just want to affirm you in that and say I've learned from you. And I just think there's probably so many parents listening who are in your same boat of both working and trying to navigate all of this. How have you guys done that? Was that something that was like really important to you before you had kids? If we're going to figure out how to navigate all this, or is it kind of evolved as you've gone?
Yeah. So I think it's been this ongoing conversation for Jason and I. When we first got married, before we had children, I had shared with him that one of the dreams in my life was to be a stay-at-home mom at some point. And so he was fully supportive of that. And we spent the first few years of our marriage taking care of like our financial situation and some other things so that it could be a reality that I could stay home and we could live on his income. And so from the very beginning, it's been this ongoing conversation of how do we do this with careers? And I did step out of the working field for quite a few years, about 6 or 7 years. And now that I'm back working, the workload that I've been able to take on has increased as the needs of the family have changed. So we look at it every year. And what I mean by that was I started back to work when Ian, our youngest, was in preschool just a few hours a week. And so I only saw clients a couple of times a week when he was in preschool so that I was still there to, you know, when he was home. I was there when our older child, our daughter, came off the school bus and all of that. So, you know, now that Ellie's in middle school and Ian will be in middle school, it's, you know, the schedule changes again. It'll change again next year. But yeah, the way that Jason and I have intentionally kind of pursued this, you know, the career and the family piece has been pretty dynamic and ongoing in the way that we just figure out what needs to happen. So we decided early on that, and this is part of my mom heart, just wanting to be there to send the kids off back when they were taking the school bus to school.
Yeah.
Sent, being the last one to send them off, right? So I'm home when our daughter went to catch the bus, and that at home when our elementary aged kiddo came home. That was really, really important. And and you know, at the time I couldn't really put my finger on why it was so important, because he would come home and he'd grab a snack and then he'd be out the door to go play with his friends or to go bike riding. And so I was home thinking, oh, okay, well, I think he needs me here.
Yeah.
But your presence is everything. You know that.
Exactly. And that's what I started to see, was that it's just knowing that mom is home, knowing that mom's there. So he would come in and check in and then he'd be off again, you know?
Yeah.
So that security, that secure foundation was really important for him. And then, you know, my teenager, when she comes home, there are times where she just wants to do all the talking and where she just is really processing the day. And so I love being available for that. So, you know, all of that to say, during the school year, that's what it looks like. And I did start working on Saturdays because we chose not to put, not to have the kids coming home to an empty house, just because of some changes in requirements with my work. So that was a sacrifice that we decided to make. It was the best situation given the options. But during the summer, when Jason's off, we'll see what this summer brings, but in the past, I pick up my workload a little bit. So he's home with the kids doing fun stuff, and I have a chance to stretch my working legs a little bit more.
Yeah. Wow. And how are you guys holding up with this whole pandemic thing? How's the home life going? I know everything just got turned on its head. Just, I think yesterday, everyone, you know, no more school for the rest of the year. You know, how are you guys doing with that? I know we're going to talk about sensory processing stuff in just a minute, but how are you guys holding up with that?
Yeah. This is week four where school has, the brick and mortar building has been closed. So, I would say that we're doing okay at this point. We made a decision early on. So by early on, I mean a couple weeks ago, that when the kids started back with their schooling, that I would be available for them Monday through Friday, not knowing what they would need, what kind of support. Because Jason is now he's back to working full time.
Yeah.
Okay.
The full time work hours, you know, from somewhere in the house wherever he can find a quiet spot.
It's okay. Mine is a closet.
He's literally working in our master closet.
That's the only place that I can find. I have to do like Zoom calls and they're like, are you in a cave? And I'm like, no, it's your closet. I'm sorry. This is literally the only place. So I feel for Jason, and it's always evolving. It's like, hey, from this hour to this hour, you can be in our son's room. And from this hour to this hour, you can be in the closet. And I'm like, I'm trying to be productive here, but like, anyway, I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. That's it. Exactly. You get it. So for right now, I'm just working on Saturdays because Jason can be with the kids and just available for them. It's not that they're so dependent at this stage, but they need to check in every once in a while. They have questions, and you know, Jason is he's a fun guy, so they want to hang out with him and play games and, you know, watch movies, that kind of thing. Yeah,
I love it. So yeah, first question we have, and I think this is one that Elizabeth did a great job queuing up, but what sensory processing disorder actually is? Because I think a lot of people have that question. We're talking about that. I know our little girl Birdie has that. And with that question, what are some signs of sensory dysregulation in little kids and even big kids or even adults, I would say, would be also part of that question. So maybe hit us with that.
And we recognize that's a big question. When people ask me what it is, I'm like, well, there are all various forms of sensory input, and it's hard to answer. So take your time.
Thanks. Yeah, it's that it can be a tough a tough thing to explain, but I think I have an explanation that I hope makes sense. So so we have 8 senses. We have the 5 senses that most people think about when they think of senses: sight, smell, taste, touch, and hearing. And then we have what are considered the 3 hidden senses, which are proprioception. That's what tells us where my body is in space. Mm-hmm. That is the sense that you use when your eyes are closed and your arms are stretched out to the side and you can touch your nose. You're using your sense of proprioception. The vestibular sense, which is the inner ear canal. It's where is my body? Where is my head in relationship to gravity? Mm-hmm. And then there's something called interoception, which is how do I know when I have to use the bathroom? It's how do I know when I'm hungry? How do I know when, you know, my heart is beating fast, I must be feeling scared. It's the interoception mm-hmm. is the sensation of all your internal organs. And, so we take information from all of those senses, and information comes in and it's organized in the brain and processed. And then there's some kind of a functional output, some kind of a response that we give in relation to the context of the situation and the sensations that we've just received. That would be what typically happens. Mm-hmm. So sensory processing is just the nervous system receiving information from the senses and then turning them into some kind of response. And sensory processing disorder is when there is a problem or a challenge with either the information coming in, the way that our body is receiving the sensations, or the way it's organized for mm-hmm. an output. So, so for example, you can have a child who may be really uncomfortable with tactile input in the form of clothing or mm-hmm. waistbands or cuffs around the wrist. That can be one area where there's an over-responsiveness to the sensory input. You can have kiddos who who show some emotional dysregulation. And so that can look like a meltdown. It can look like rigidity, inflexibility. Mm. And the way that I have started thinking about dysregulation in relationship to the sensory processing is it all comes through the nervous system. And so it's some kind of fight, flight, freeze response in mm-hmm. the sympathetic nervous system. For some kids, their language goes away when they become dysregulated and, mm-hmm. And they stop being able to articulate or express anything. And taking in new information auditorily is usually not going to happen very efficiently, you know, in that stage either.
Mm-hmm. That's I'm like sitting here learning. So I know this stuff and know some of this stuff, but like the way you just said that, like so many light bulbs are going off in my head. And I'm wondering, even as people are going to be listening right now thinking, oh my gosh, you know, like maybe some of this stuff is making a lot of sense. So like as an example of all these different senses, which, you know, yes, we all hear about the 5 senses, but we very rarely hear about the others. With our little ones, with ourselves, you know, how can we begin to understand if, you know, we do have some sensory processing, either problems or are dysregulated? How do we kind of tell in our little ones? How do we tell and even in ourselves I know self-diagnosis is not the best idea, right? I'm not trying to look for that, but mm-hmm. how would we even be aware that that's actually going on?
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, all of us have experienced a little bit of dysregulation at various times based on what's happening around us, where our own, anxiety or stress level is. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that as adults who may not have sensory processing disorder, that we can resume, we can return to a place of regulation. We can work through that. It doesn't throw off everything else and require a Herculean effort to get back to a state of regulation. Yeah. That's probably the biggest difference that I can think of. And I'll just use the example of what's happening right now with all the school shutdowns and you know, this physical distancing requirement and the quarantining and all of that.
Yeah.
And I can give an example for myself that I have noticed that my anxiety has been a little bit higher because the predictability in my routine is mostly gone. I'm trying to put some pieces in place that are predictable with a schedule. And sometimes it works, and you know, some days it works better than others. But so within myself, because I have this awareness of what dysregulation looks like and then what to do about it, I'm aware that, you know, when my heart starts beating fast and I have a hard time taking a deep breath, that, oh, okay, so my anxiety is a little bit higher right now because I'm, you know, because of XYZ, whatever reason it could be. And so then the next step would be to try to implement some tools and try to use some tools to try and figure out how to get back to a place where, you know, my heartbeat is a little bit slower and I can take a deep breath. And,
No, that totally makes sense. And I think that that's such a good way to explain it of when we start to notice in ourselves or even with maybe our more typical kids, they're a little dysregulated. I'm seeing some anxiety in them. We can kind of get them back to center or get ourselves back to center, learn what our kids need, learn what we need. But the kids who actually have sensory processing disorder, it takes a lot of effort to get them back to more regulation and calm them down. And some days, every day is different. And would you kind of explain to us, like, I feel like I've found since Birdie has been diagnosed and, you know, we work with you all the time and we have now years of tools under our belt. I get asked a lot from parents who are just kind of observing, usually starting with their toddlers, observing them and saying, I thought it was just that maybe they were a really difficult toddler, but I'm wondering if maybe it's something else. And I always encourage them, well, go to Treehouse Therapies, go get an evaluation. I think a lot of people are afraid of the evaluation because they don't want to label their children. And I personally just love information. It's helpful to me. I want to give her every tool possible. But I also ran across something the other day. It was a mom who had two kids with special needs, and she was kind of anti the label and didn't get testing done until they were older. And she said she was realizing that the label is actually a service to their kids, because not only did it help her be able to give her kids the tools they needed, but it actually even helped them when they went to college. There were all sorts of things that the teachers could provide them, more time doing certain things, that it actually was a service to them. So what would you say to the parent who's like, I feel like something might be different with my child. Where do I start? Where do I research? Where should I not research? And maybe what are some of like the, I mean, I know this is a wide range of different responses that kids can have, but what are some of the maybe more typical things you see with children when by the time they come to you that their parents are saying, man, okay, this is the thing that's happening, or the, you know, maybe what are the top 3, 4, 5 things that you see that might help parents know when to ask for help?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question so much. So my advice, and this is what I tell any parent who's wondering, is have a conversation with your pediatrician first. So many of our pediatricians are aware of what occupational therapy is, and they're aware of sensory processing challenges. And that's probably the first place that I would recommend a conversation to happen. Because from the pediatrician, that's where a referral would be sent. And you know, in any community, your pediatricians are going to be aware of what the resources are in that community, so they can guide you well. For families and for parents who are interested in researching on their own, I have a favorite website that I would love to direct parents to. This is what I recommend. It's spdstar.org, and that is the spdstar.org. And the STAR Institute is this really wonderful place in Denver, Colorado, and they have a three-pronged approach. They research sensory processing disorder. They have a clinic where they apply the clinical, they do the clinical work. So they work with families from all over the world. And then they have an education branch. And I love that they have all three of those things. And their website has some really wonderful information for families that are just starting to ask questions and just wondering and not quite sure where to start. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of free education, free resources. And we actually just had someone from the STAR Institute do a telehealth. Well, it wasn't telehealth, but it was on Zoom. It was a two-day training for a therapist here in this area in Central Oregon. And it was amazing. So, The thing I love about the STAR approach is that they look at overall nervous system regulation and relationship and then sensory processing. So it's this triad approach to the intervention. Mm-hmm. And it just makes so much sense to me because, you know, our kiddos are with us all the time. Well, now they're with us really all the time. The time.
Yeah. Yes.
and so leaning into that relationship and leaning into, co-regulation, which is, which is this in a grossly oversimplified way of describing it. It's this awareness of, I am here, I see you, I hear you. And we're having this interaction, this conversation, and it's just being fully present with our kids and maybe changing or modulating the sound of our voice, the volume of our voice, and how that everything we do can influence our environment and the kiddo who's maybe having a dysregulated moment. So the STAR Institute does an amazing job. It's a wonderful resource right there. And then there was another part to your question that I think I missed. It was, you were looking for some examples of...
Like what are some of the main things you see in kids coming to you? Like maybe their responses to things or different areas where they might over respond or under respond? Because I know there's sensory avoiding and sensory seeking. Any of those things that you're like, I've got something to say about that.
So a lot of families who come in for OT with kiddos who are maybe having sensory challenges, it's these families that come in and say, everything is hard. And, and there's not a lot of joy because everything is so hard. Everything from bathing to brushing your teeth, to combing your hair or washing hair, to eating, to dressing, everything from making a transition within an expected schedule to leaving the house and getting in the car. It's so, so hard. And those are the families that I just love to work with because I think of it as climbing in the trench with them and letting them know there is hope and there is help. Yeah. And what you're describing is familiar to me. I see this a lot and it can be better. And, so those are a lot of the kiddos that I see. For example, just to give you some examples of what that might look like even more detailed, there can be kiddos who are so sensitive and over-responsive to tactile input that they absolutely cannot handle washing their hands in warm water or taking a warm or a hot bath. The water temperature needs to be ice cold. That sounds miserable to me, but for these little kids, that's the only temperature that feels normal to their bodies. Everything else feels painful. And, kiddos who have a full-on emotional overreaction, a meltdown when it's time to leave something that is enjoyable or fun or make a transition, even if the transition is leading to something like a play date or, that can be just a meltdown that takes, tears and emotional outbursts that can take, a long time to settle down and then make that transition. So, you know, transitions that might be fairly straightforward and simple that we might not think about, but for some of these kiddos who have sensory challenges, everything just takes longer and it's just a lot harder. So that's, that's where OT can come in and help.
And I think that's such a good way to describe it. And that's been our experience with Birdie, of just the normal day to day is really hard. And I can't even count how many times I've said to you, okay, this is what is happening. I can't tell if it's because she's three, she just turned four, but if this is 3 year old behavior or sensory behavior, or if it's a mixture of both, because a lot of times they're hard to untangle.
It's so complex.
It's so complex. And it changes a lot. And that's, you've helped me navigate all of that. But, you know, for Birdie, just a few examples of what it's looked like of for a good, I don't know, probably 2 year stretch, every time we got in the car, she would scream within minutes of getting in the car, and she'd scream all the way to wherever we got. And she didn't have words to explain why she was upset. And I didn't know why she was upset. And there was nothing you can do in the car when you're trying to drive somewhere. And then if we had another 2 year stretch where she would only wear pajamas. And it wasn't willful. It was just, we finally got her to understand when we leave the house, you have to wear clothes. But, and she's doing way better now, and she's wearing clothes. But when she starts to become dysregulated or get a little bit overwhelmed, she starts asking for pajamas.
Or she starts disrobing.
And we always know that's a clue. Yeah.
Well, no, like the other day, like, well, when we used to have church, you guys remember that time when you get together in big groups? So we had this thing called church, and you'd all get together on a Sunday. Uh-huh. Anyway, it's coming back eventually, but we would like be, you know, we have like a setup teardown situation at our church right now, and we meet in a gym at a school, and you know, at the end of it, everyone's taking down chairs, and then, you know, where all the chairs were, there's just this open space, and first Birdie would be like kind of out of it, and then she'd like take off her shoes because she was like, I gotta take my shoes off. And then I remember capturing a video, she literally just goes to the middle of the gym and just lays down on the floor with her hands up and just stays
at the
there
ceiling.
And she was there for a long time.
Oh, she does that a lot. Like,
and it's kind of like, I think this is fine, but like, are you okay?
But she's learning like what actually helps her feel regulated. And when she's overwhelmed and it's a big space like that, then
As a parent, like, just so this is maybe where you can help as well, because like as a parent, as a dad, I'm like, that's so cute, she's four. But if she's like 25 and doing that, I'm like kind of concerned. So like, give a maybe, like, you know, is how does that kind of work? Is there, as kids get older and develop, and I know our situation is we're only so far into it, but, you know, is the hope with OT, and I think I know the answer is in one sense, yes, but, you know, you're in the process of helping them learn some of the stuff that their body's not naturally giving to them or helping them with, you know, in a lot of cases, are kids able to grow up and learn these things in a way where they can function and thrive in culture and society? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the goal, And I will say that with the little ones, we have maturation on our side, you know, as they grow, as they mature, as their life experiences expand, as they continue with the therapy. And I've heard it called scaffolding supports, which are supports that are in place as long as the child needs it. And then as long as when they don't need that support, it goes away. And there does come a place where the shift happens from the external awareness and tools coming from mom and dad and any other adult in the environment. And the shift is, it gets handed off to the child or the individual, and in the form of self-awareness of what is happening inside of my body and what are the physical signs that I'm no longer feeling okay. I'm starting to feel whatever it is, afraid, anxious, dysregulated. And so that's a process, and it can be, it can be a long process, but that's the end goal, is that we would grow these wonderful, amazing, beautiful children who have sensory differences, but that they are able to engage in their world in a way that aligns with how they're wired and how they were created. And, you know, each of us has different, we all have different temperaments, different wiring. Some are introverts, some are extroverts. Some of us are somewhere along that continuum.
Yeah.
And that's no different for our kiddos who have sensory challenges. And so I think as parents, I think part of our job as parents is to maybe shift the lens that we're looking at our kids through, and just recognizing, like what you said, Elizabeth, you know, what is being four and what is a sensory challenge that, you know, and what is temperament and what is, you know, introversion, extroversion, those kinds of things will, you know, will flesh themselves out as our kids grow. I think the preschool years are, you may get some hints on, you know, wiring and, you know, in that regard, but it'll become a little bit more clear, I think, as kids get to be closer to the 7-year mark. I think I'd read somewhere that that's usually where temperament sort of becomes a little bit more clear in some ways.
Yeah.
So,
no, that makes sense. Yeah. We see that even with our older kids, where there's a natural shifting that starts to happen. You kind of know who they are a little bit more, and I feel like you can parent to that a little bit better. Now, talk to us about what are some ways that, I'm just thinking of the parents that are at home right now, home all the time. They can't go get an OT evaluation. And they're seeing, you know, maybe they're recognizing it as some sensory dysregulation. What are some things that parents can be doing? Maybe it's activities, or maybe before we talk about activities, one thing that you've helped me with so much with Birdie is, you know, our tendency is when our kids are freaking out, because that's a lot of times what some of these sensory meltdowns look like. It's screaming, it's kicking, it's, you know, they're big eruptions. They're not usually small or mild. And we can tend to, obviously we're stressed and we can get flustered and we can have a big response too. But you've helped me so much in learning a whole new language to me of how to talk to Birdie and when to even stop talking, because she is one of the kids that when she's dysregulated and is overly responding, she loses her words and she can't hear what I'm saying. And so talking to her just like makes it worse, because she can't process what I'm saying and it all just gets jumbled up in there. But you've helped me so much in reflecting back to her, even in my facial expressions and my body language, reflecting back to her what she's feeling to be able to help her understand what she's feeling. Because like you said, the hope is that someday she will be able to know in her own self, oh, that feeling I'm feeling right now is because everything is too loud around me and there's too many people and I'm feeling overwhelmed and I need to do X, Y, and Z. Like, that's the hope. But for now, I'm her regulation of showing her what it is that she's feeling and showing her with my own body how she can calm down. So can you talk to us a little bit about that, or maybe help parents, like, so say their kid is freaking out or really mad about something that just seems like an over response. What do they do?
Yeah, that's so perfect. Just what you just said, that makes so much sense. And the first thing I think of is, as parents, we need to make sure that we are calm and regulated, and it can be really easy to shift from being calm and regulated to being a little bit or a lot dysregulated when we've had a child who is having a really loud experience and a big emotion that they're expressing in maybe a challenging way. And so I would always start with the parent. Make sure that, you know, that you are taking care of yourself in that moment. And maybe that looks like taking a few deep breaths. Maybe pausing for a minute before you engage. And this comes back to this concept of co-regulation, where we can impact someone else's nervous system by the way we're presenting ourselves. So if my child is having a really loud, big emotional experience that involves yelling and maybe crying and flailing of the arms, they're experiencing a lot of dysregulation in a significant way. Probably the most powerful thing that I can do is take a deep breath, check myself, and get down on their level. So physically making my body a little smaller, softening my voice, if I choose to use words at all, and making eye contact and arranging my facial affect and my body language in a way that is open and expressing, I'm here with you. I see you. And I see that you're having a really hard time right now. And I want to help. I'm here for you. And sometimes that's expressed just by making yourself small, getting down where they're at, and just maybe touching their ankle if they'll tolerate that. If not, it's just physically being close and being able to attune relationally to exactly where they're at and meeting them in that place. And so, you know, what usually happens is eventually, and it can take a few minutes, it can take longer than that, it can take, you know, 15 minutes or longer, but whenever it happens that the child starts to calm down a little bit and they start to shift from that fight, flight, freeze place in their nervous system to a place of more calm, alert, attentive, I'm able to have a conversation, I can listen, that's when you start to engage gently, softly, right? So using all of you in a way that, meets the kiddo where they're at. And sometimes like in our home, when we have those situations, sometimes it's walking away and taking a 30-minute break and for everybody, and then coming back when we're calm, when everybody's calm, and we can have a conversation where the words will be heard and the conversation will be meaningful, because in the moment, there's not a lot that can be said that will be received or heard.
There's one thing you just came to my mind is, I think one thing you've taught us to do so well, and primarily Elizabeth, and she's taught me, because she's one that's usually going to the therapies because it's usually during work time for me, but, is how, that gentleness, that getting down, getting low. And it's just been so helpful when you change your tone, your posture, all that, how it all just like changes, like it disrupts everything in a good way. Like all of a sudden they're like kind of taken back by, whoa, your response is just so present and calm. And they're almost taken back by the fact that you're handling it so gently and presently, so I think I just want to say that works. That's been such a huge gift to us. Thank you. Yes. We've learned so much from you in that. But then also the fight, flight, and freeze, you know, you're talking about that. And I'm imagining there's people that listen to this and go, I've heard of those before, but I wonder if it'd be helpful even just for a second to give people kind of the heads up of like what's actually going on in those moments and why that's actually like important for us to stop and recognize that could be one of the things that are happening. Because I even know as I'm listening, I'm hearing you process, like talk about this, like, man, I just have some, I would love for you to just kind of dig into that a little if you have a minute to do that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So our nervous system has several different parts to it. And one of the parts is called the sympathetic nervous system. And then we have the parasympathetic. And the sympathetic nervous system that's the fight, flight, freeze part. That's what kicks into gear when we feel scared or we're afraid. When there's I think of that synonymously with big dysregulation. The parasympathetic part, that's often considered the rest and digest part. And so when I'm talking about the fight, flight, freeze, it's that part of your nervous system that you don't generally have control over. And it is a response to something that is fearful or scary. And for some of our kiddos who have sensory processing challenges, things that we wouldn't necessarily consider to be fearful or scary feel fearful and scary to them because of the way their nervous system is interpreting that information. So, you know, for some kids, being in a loud crowd can throw them into fight, flight, freeze. It just is, it's overwhelming. It's too much. It feels really scary. And so, I am constantly trying to simplify in my mind the way that I think about things. And so for anyone who's listening, who's very, very knowledgeable about this, forgive me if I'm oversimplifying it, but, I tend to think of the fight, flight, freeze as going hand in hand with the dysregulation. And so, so I, when I'm looking at that, I'm thinking also, you know, what that feels like in my own body when I shift into that place. It doesn't feel good. And so, you know, as parents and adults, we take a moment to think about, gosh, what does that feel like for myself when I'm feeling scared, or I just want to flee a situation and run because it just is too much? What does that feel like? Yeah. And sometimes that can help us understand a little bit more what our kiddos are experiencing.
Makes sense. And I think it's a reflex, or however you want to say it, that God gave us to be able to respond appropriately when there is a valid threat. Mm-hmm. And I think for our kids who are struggling with sensory issues, that they're feeling that just as deeply as we would if there was, you know, an oncoming car that we knew was going to hit us, but they're just feeling it over things that are just kind of normal everyday things. And I know with Birdie, we see all those responses in her. When she gets hurt, she feels really out of control. So she fights, she just gets mad and she wants to hit something. And we've had to help teach her, it's okay to cry. You've helped us tell her that was surprising. Yeah. You didn't expect to fall, you know? Yeah. And she'll have any one of those fight, flight, freeze responses. And sometimes she'll completely shut down and can't talk, And it will change from month to month, year to year, the things that used to cause that. We went through a long season. You helped us a ton where cars were just, she was so afraid of any type of vehicle, parked or moving, that she couldn't, she wouldn't go outside. It was just like she couldn't, she would scream through parking lots. And, and now totally fine. Cars are not an issue at all. She'd moved on to other things. But just having that response to things that maybe wouldn't typically do that for anybody else who's not struggling with that. But so let's move on to what are some things, you know, you mentioned deep breaths, you mentioned ourselves kind of getting smaller, talking more calmly. I know deep breaths have been really helpful for Birdie, and I can't actually tell her we're taking deep breaths. I just have to start taking them. If I say, let's take some deep breaths, then she says, no, I don't want to take deep breaths. But if I start taking them, she will eventually kind of calm down. And then we start to play a little game where I blow in her face and then she has to take a deep breath and blow in mine. But a couple other things I know you use in therapy and you've helped us use at home. It's like blowing bubbles, heavy work. I know weighted blankets are helpful for some kids. Birdie right now won't tolerate a weighted blanket, but some kids love them. So can you walk us through just what are some things parents could be doing right now throughout the day?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a few favorites. And I want to go back to the breathing because I was spending some time thinking about what is it about the breathing that helps to calm our nervous system? And it's so breathing and breath in and of itself is so powerful. You can actually change your physiology and where your nervous system is operating just by the way that you're breathing.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, I'm not sure your picture froze there for a minute.
I think it's working on our end.
We're good.
Can you hear us?
Okay. Okay, so maybe we edit that part out.
Yeah,
I can hear you.
We're good. Keep going.
Okay. So if I start breathing in a really shallow way, kind of huffing and puffing from my shoulders, then I can actually shift myself into more of a fight, flight, freeze place. But if I slow that down and I take long, slow, deep breaths with a long exhale, I can shift myself into a place of down regulation where I'm feeling calmer throughout my body. Mm-hmm. And the power of breathing, I just think is so beautiful because we need to breathe to live. And the way that we breathe impacts our nervous system. And so blowing bubbles and doing pinwheels, a lot of times for young kids, you can get a lot of resistance if you want to, you know, prescribe an activity and then it gives them something to say no to. So I love using playfulness as a way of eliciting that breathing. So bubbles, pinwheels. Now with everyone being home, looking around your house, do you have straws and cotton balls? You know, you could have a cotton ball race where, you know, you're blowing through the straw. My favorite way of breathing to calm the nervous system is through singing. And, your family is pretty musical. Yeah. So singing, it's all in the exhale is where the calming happens. And I was thinking about that and thinking about how, for me, when I sing worship at home, a cappella, I'm doing dishes and I have, you know, a verse that just comes to mind and I just start singing. It changes everything without changing anything. And so I love the singing part. I love the worship singing because, you know, the breathing helps my nervous system and the words that I'm singing that worship, it helps remind me of who God is and who I am. Yeah. And it helps me to recenter and focus. And, you know, our home is very cozy. And usually if all the doors are open, a gentle conversation that's happening at a normal volume in the kitchen can be heard throughout the house. And so there have been times where I've had fun playing a little trick on my family where I will sing the same verse over and over again or a song in the kitchen. And then pretty soon I'll hear someone else pick it up and kind of pick up the song and then someone else will pick it up. And they're all just doing the thing that they were doing. But we've got this, you know, this worship kind of erupting spontaneously throughout the house. And
I love
it's kind
that.
Of fun to, you know, we get songs stuck in our heads. But so that is probably one of my favorite tools to use.
I love that. I think that's so, so good. Man, I feel like I could ask you questions all day long. I feel like this will not be the last time we get you on here, just helping our kids, you know, and I know you've been such a gift even in helping us navigate the conversation with our older kids, because I know sometimes with older siblings having to understand maybe why their younger sibling is acting in a certain way. I remember a month or two ago now, it feels like it's been forever since we've actually had a session with you with everything that's going on, but you were helping, you just talking to Duke and Scarlett of just how do, you know, just acknowledging that sometimes living with our team member, Birdie, as we talk about when we talk about this stuff with her, can be challenging, and it's wonderful and it's a gift and she teaches us so much, but sometimes it's stressful when she's screaming and upset and you were teaching them to take deep breaths. And that sometimes they just need to back away. And as soon as we got in the car, Birdie was having a meltdown as we were starting to drive. And I just hear Scarlett just like blowing air out. She's just like, what are you doing? I'm doing what Michelle said to do. But I've seen it make such a difference in how they're responding to her. So I think even in this time, for parents who are at home and maybe everybody's reacting to everybody because maybe you have one kid who is reacting more to this change of routine. I know change in routine, especially for sensory kids, for any kids, but I think especially sensory kids can be triggering. I know it was to Birdie for about the first week. And then we've seen a shift in her where I actually think the slowing of things has actually been really good for her. You've just been helpful in helping us navigate how do we do this as a family? Because this is not just a parent helping their one child who needs extra help. This is, we're all in this with Birdie and she's in all of this with us. And I just love what you said, I think towards the beginning about just, I think it was that Star Institute you were talking about of just navigating just the emotional relationships, doing all this in relationship as well, because that's so holistic to me. God made our bodies. He made them inside and out, like that scripture we read in the beginning. And he cares about all of that. And he made us as relational beings to not live in isolation like we are right now, but to live in community and to make space for each other who are different and to make space for each other who are gifted in this field like you are. So, man, I just would love to see a world where this is just more of a an open conversation, because I think of just how many moms feel isolated, feeling like, man, I must be doing a bad job because it's so hard with my toddler or my 6-year-old, you know? And I think us parents, and I think maybe moms especially, maybe we're in the thick of it more, just need to start having this dialogue more, I think, of just so we don't feel alone. That doesn't mean we're doing a bad job because our child will only wear pajamas, you know?
That's right. Oh, man. Yeah, with Birdie, she shot all of the...
All the ideals.
All the ideals just right out the window. And it's so good for us because that's real and it's so good. We have just so appreciated your time. Before we jump off here, one, if there's anything, just any, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, so if you're like, I need to think about it and get back, you totally can. But if there's one thing you'd want to send people away with today, one word of wisdom or something that you've learned or something to give some encouragement or hope, what would that be? And again, I know I'm putting you on the spot. So,
yeah. So I do have a thought. I want to, and it goes back to a couple more tips that I, that have to do with leaning into relationship and reciprocal activities, being present, playing games and heavy work. I just keep thinking about all of the home chores and activities that need to be still done, even though we're all home, and how the power of including all of our kids in those activities, and how they can include heavy work, like pushing, pulling, lifting, that sort of thing, yard work, laundry, things that help the family, creating a sense of for every one of our kiddos, especially the kiddos who have sensory processing challenges and differences, sending that message that you are an important part of this family. Our family would not be the same without you, and your contribution makes the difference. And I think that that's so beautiful in the family construct, in the family unit, but also that message of identity and, you know, to the child, of letting them know, you know, what you do makes a difference. It makes a difference for the family. And so I guess that's the piece that I would just leave families with is, you know, you're not alone. There's help out there. There's a lot of folks who want to help. And leaning into relationship is pretty significant and helpful, I think.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. And I think if, for those of you unfamiliar with heavy work, it's that, like you said, lifting, pushing, as simple as pushing a laundry basket across the floor full of laundry, having them help you, and where it can come in is just helping you with household chores. That is actually really just regulating and recentering for kids. Mm-hmm. And that's been hugely helpful to Birdie. That and jumping. Jumping is like magic for her. So she will start pushing something and then kind of jump as she's doing it.
And she's better,
But I think that that's a beautiful way, having them help around the house with stuff like that is a beautiful way to not only be doing at-home therapy with them, but make them feel like they're included. I know Birdie, clearing the table is one of her absolute all-time favorite things. She can do it 10 times faster than any of the other kids.
But it's terrifying because she's still so clumsy. And so she's still so clumsy, and she's taking these dishes and they're all glass, and we're like, no, you're just like watching every step.
She's
like,
broken a few.
We know that it's good for her. It's terrible for our finances, but this is good for her.
Every broken plate is one plate closer to a new set.
That's what it is. So we're trying to have that perspective, but man, it's like she, because all the older kids, we make them clear the table, but her, she's always like, every time she's like, oh, I want to clear the table.
We're
like, okay, you know, you're just like biting your tongue. You're like, we want you to do this, we think. But anyway, but we have just, we're so thankful that God brought you to us. Thank you. You're a gift to our family, and not only a gift to us and Birdie, her development, but also I know so many people that are going to hear this, but just want to say specifically, thank you for your time today. Thank you for depositing wisdom and encouragement and perspective and knowledge into to us, and also those who are going to be listening. And as you're at home with your family, specifically Michelle, enjoy those moments. Thank you for the sacrifices you're making that nobody sees. You're an inspiration to us. So thank you.
Thank you so much,
Michelle. I'll see you Saturday via Zoom for Birdie's appointment.
Yep. All right. Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.